This is Bypass Firewalls, Application Whitelist, Secure Remote Desktops in under 20 seconds. So please join me in welcoming Zoltan Balash.
Hello, DEF CON. I have a question for you. Do you enjoy DEF CON? Let's try it again. Do you enjoy DEF CON? All right, so this is the talk about bypassing firewalls, application whitelist, and secure remote desktops. Do you know how to bypass firewalls? If yes, raise your hands. Okay. Now, I promise that at the end of my presentation, all of you will be able to bypass firewalls. This is my name. This is where I work. And this is what we usually do. We call it AV testing, but in reality, we try to bypass the antivirus systems. I know it's not challenging, but someone has to do that job as well. These are the things I'm really proud, especially that I'm a proud member of the Goulash team, and we completed as the second runner-up at the Global Cyber Olympics Capture the Flag competition in 2012. I'm from Hungary, and as we are a very, very small country, we are really proud of our achievements. For example, did you know that the Rubik's Cube has been invented by a Hungarian guy 40 years ago? Or did you know that the phone exchange system is the idea of a Hungarian guy? You know, I think that the phone exchange system is basically the grandmother of the internet. Also, one of the main developers of the basic languages from Hungary. And last but not least, 2 years ago, a guy nicknamed Pipacs won DEF CON Lifetime Achievement Award here for his Linux kernel security patches. He's also from Hungary. And I have to admit that I love hacking. This is what I do. This is my life. This is my hobby. Okay, now I'm going to ask you for a little game. Close your eyes, all of you. And when I'm going to ask a question, and I want to think a bit about it for a second. If you hear hacking high security systems, what is the first image that pops into your mind? Now you can open it. Was it this one? Okay, in the following slides, we will do something similar, but without having these cables and acrobatic stuff. Okay, so here is the story. Let's say that I'm a spy and I want access to a hardened, secure RDP server. And unfortunately, I'm not Tom Cruise, so I cannot hack it like he did. And I want access to this RDP server because it contains, for example, some very confidential data or something like that. And on top of that, I need persistent command and control communication to this RDP server. For example, I want to upload files, download files, or just having some interactive remote code execution. All right, this hack could be very easy in an ideal world. For example, let's say I infect a desktop's client. After that, I can steal the RDP password, connect to the RDP server.
Excuse me a second.
Yeah?
So we have a first-time speaker. And judging by the round of applause, I take it you guys know what's going on.
Yeah. You don't look like you do.
So we have a tradition here at DEF CON. It's called Shout the Noob. And
do you have a co-speaker?
No.
Oh, you're all by yourself?
Yes.
Oh, well, then you have to drink twice.
So as a way to welcome you here to DEF CON, we'll do a shot with you on stage.
Cheers.
Welcome.
Congratulations.
So, after I infect the client desktop, I can steal the RDP password. And with the password, I can connect to the RDP server, drop my malware there, have the command and control, and that's all. But in my case, it's a little bit different, something more challenging. For example, the RDP server is not reachable from the internet. And users are using two-factor authentication to access the RDP server. Also, drive mapping has been disabled, which means there is no direct file copy between the RDP client and the server. And the most important thing is that there is some very restrictive hardware firewall between the users and the remote desktop server, which only allows that port from the user's workstations to the RDP server. Nothing else, no inbound, no outbound, nothing else, just the RDP port. And last but not least, on the RDP server, there is some application whitelisting used. Okay, if you think this scenario has been made up, I can assure you that this is a very realistic scenario. Because when I was doing some penetration tests, we had a very similar environment at the client. And we were talking about whether this very restrictive environment is hackable or not. And because I'm a hacker, I said, yes, we can hack it. But unfortunately, during the engagement, we didn't have enough dedicated time for that. So you might ask whether I was pissed off that I couldn't hack this environment. Yes, I was. So I went home, and although the project was over, I started to code. Now, this is how you can imagine the whole scenario. I'm the spy, I'm the attacker at the bottom, and after infecting the user's workstation, I want to access this secure remote desktop server through the firewall. And once a wise man said that in hacking there is no such thing as impossible, only things that are more challenging. Now, if you agree with this wise man, raise your hands. All right, great. So I don't want to begin the story from Adam and Eve, so let's say that I have already compromised a user's workstation who has usually access to the secure RDP server. And meanwhile, I have also access to a test RDP server, which is pretty similar to the production one I want to hack, but it doesn't have the confidential data I'm looking for. But I know how the server looks like, what services are running, and so forth. Now, as you can clearly see, this whole talk about is post-exploitation. Now, if you are a red team member, hands up. Pen testers, ethical hackers, red team members. All right. Now, you should listen because I'm going to show you two new tools which you can use during your hacking. Now, if you are a blue team member, defending networks, hands up. Okay, so now I'm going to show you some new things you should look for during log analysis or incident response or forensic analysis or something like that. Now, after I was facing this big problem, I'm not sure what do you do when you have such huge problems, but what I do is that I try to divide the problem into smaller pieces and rule them all one by one. And I have identified four different problems I had to solve. The first one is how can I drop the malware into the RDP server? Second is how can I start it? Because the application whitelist should block it. After that, I had to elevate my privileges to administrator level, which was needed for the fourth step, which is bypassing the hardware firewall. And the focus of my presentation is on the first and the fourth step, because these are the tools I have developed. Okay, now let's start with some small demo. The first tool I'm calling it, for example, user simulator. What it means that this tool can simulate keyboard events, and through the keyboard events, I can do a hell of a lot of different things. Now, let's show it. Here are the, Oh, that's gonna be fun. Okay, now that's better. So this is the tool I'm going to start soon. And this is the configuration file of the tool. It starts with some sleep, and it presses the Windows R button, which is start, some sleep again, type the text WinWord, creates a new document, some sleep again. Now, please give me a color we want to use for this demo. Shout it.
Green.
Purple.
Purple.
Okay. I heard purple, and give me an animal name.
Zebra.
Zebra, all right, so we're gonna use purple zebra for this demo. Just a second. Now I'm going to start this tool, and I'm going to show my hands that I'm not cheating. What should happen that it starts WinWord, creates a new document, types the purple zebra there, and through the GUI I can do a lot of stuff. For example, I can change the font size, I can change the font type, Comic Sans, for example, because it's always comic. I can change the colors, so to get an idea of what it does. No, I don't need that. Okay. Now, what my tool does in this hacking scenario that it waits for the user, so let the user connect to the RDP server with the two-factor authentication, and after the connection is success, then my tool creates a screenshot, and it shows it to the user in the foreground. And optionally, it can block the user keyboard and mouse as well for 20 seconds. User experiences, oh my god, it froze again. What really happens in the background that it starts typing things. And because the RDP client connection is the currently active window, everything which is typed, it's been done on the RDP server. So I can start, for example, Microsoft Word on the RDP server, drop some ASCII encoded payload into the Word document, create some macro code, Visual Basic macro code, which can write out the binary code I will need, and it will start the binaries. That's the first step. I said that I want to drop my malware into the RDP server, and I'm going to show you at the end how this really looks like in practice. Now, there are another use cases I was able to test with this user simulator. For example, I can instruct the antivirus GUI to add a directory to exclusion from the scans. And it's very good because... Another use case is that I can install some trusted root certificate authority, and there is going to be a warning dialog which the user should accept, but my tool can detect this warning dialog and accept the warning. So it's the possibilities with this tool is really endless. Okay, now, next step, I have to bypass this application whitelist, which is Microsoft AppLocker in my case. When I tried to research how I can bypass AppLocker, I have checked the official documentation, and Microsoft was kind enough to give me a lot of bypass techniques. For example, you can use scripts to bypass it, you can set some very funny flags in your binary. I would say that the flag should be called bypass AppLocker flag or something like that, because that's the only purpose of this flag. If it's set, then it will bypass the AppLocker policy. And last but not least, if you have administrator level privileges, then by default you are not restricted by AppLocker at all. But in my case, I have chosen something different, because it turned out that I can load DLLs directly from the Word macro code, Visual Basic macro code. And it's pretty funny, because with the DLL loading, there is no executable running, so there is nothing to restrict, so it will bypass the Microsoft AppLocker policy. And if you thought that Microsoft Office tools like Word or Excel sucks, then you didn't know that you can even run shellcode directly from Visual Basic code. You can do port scans. So if you have a box where you can't install stuff, but Microsoft Office is installed there, you have everything you want, really. It's a really powerful tool. All right, now the first step, I had to elevate my privileges to administrator level, because I will need it for the fourth step. You will see why. And there are a lot of different possibilities how I can achieve this. For example, if I have some zero-day privilege exploration exploit, then I can use that, or if the server is unpatched, then I can exploit that unpatched vulnerability. Or last but not least, I can search for a vulnerable third-party service, for example, for privilege escalation. And don't forget that after I have admin level, I'm not restricted by AppLocker at all. And in my case, I have chosen the third one by exploiting a vulnerable third-party service. And as you can clearly see on this slide, this service is vulnerable to privilege escalation because I can replace the service file, and before replacing the file, I can stop the service, replace the file, and start it. So my file will be started with system-level privileges. If you were not able to see it in the previous slide, here might be a little bit better. That every terminal server user has write privileges to this file, and every interactively logged on users are allowed to stop or start the service. Now I'm sure that all of you are bored to death. So here's a little quiz for you. The first person who can answer this question will get this Rubik's Cube from me after the presentation. So, the question is, what's the name of the company which published the first paper about packet filter firewalls? Not Microsoft, not Sun. DEC, I heard deck there. Yes? All right. Okay, now the fourth step. So as I said, there is a really restrictive hardware firewall between the users and me. And now I have dropped my malware. I was able to elevate my privileges to admin level, but still, how the hell can I get my shells? I can't use bind shell, I can't use reverse shell, I can't use cover channels like DNS, ICMP, IPv6, UDP, whatever. I don't have any shells, so I have to do something about this. My very first idea was that, let's say that I install a kernel driver, and the kernel driver will look for the incoming traffic. And when the traffic starts with some magic packets, for example, magic data I set, then the kernel driver will know that this traffic has to be handled differently, and the kernel driver can reroute the traffic to another destination port. But the problem with this approach was that it turned out that I have to rewrite all the hacker applications I want to use for my shells, or I have to create some proxy application and use that proxy application on both the client and proxy level to add these magic bytes and remove the magic bytes. And I said, no, that's not going to work. There should be something simpler here. And my idea was that why don't I use the TCP source port to indicate the kernel driver that this traffic is something special. And there are some limitations with this approach. For example, if the attacker and the server is between the attacker and the server, there is a firewall which does some net magic, but in my case, I've said that I don't care about this scenario. So if you want to implement this on a Linux machine, it's pretty easy. It's really one line of IP tables code. Let's say that every destination port 22 SSH, which is coming from source port 1337, should be redirected to my bind shell, which is on 31337. Easy peasy. But not on Windows. You don't have IP tables on Windows. This is how it should look like in reality. So either the attacker or the infected workstation, I can set the TCP source port for the communication, and I will connect to the RDP port on the RDP server, but the kernel driver will see that this communication is special, so it will redirect the traffic to another port where I can start a bind shell, for example. If you are into Lord of the Rings and have you seen the Desolation of Smaug, then this is pretty similar. So this is the guy who is the very dumb stateful firewall with all his friends, and they are inspecting the packets. And they are really dumb. So they only check at the fishes, which is the port, the destination port in my case. So they think this is legit. And they cannot see the backdoor traffic inside. But after the traffic arrives, the backdoor traffic can be separated from the whole traffic, and I can use it for my bind shell. In order to install kernel driver on a Windows 64 environment, you need a trusted, signed kernel driver. And this was a problem until I found a really great framework called WinDivert. And the developer of this framework is called Bazel. And he has asked the Nemea software development team to sign the kernel drivers, and they ship it with the framework, which is a trusted signed kernel driver. And with the framework, you can use your own executables, and it will interact with the trusted signed kernel driver. And it's fun. There are also other ways to bypass this restriction. For example, there is a PatchGuard bypass code on CodeProject. There were also some rootkits which used I think they have used old VirtualBox kernel driver, and they exploited buffer overflow, something like that, in the kernel driver to execute code at the kernel level. Or last but not least, one can use my user simulator to install a Rogue certificate authority, and after that one can use the kernel driver with the certificate authority signed by the hacker. Okay, now the question was that how can I set the TCP source port for any application? And it turned out that it's pretty easy because the Netcat tool already provides it for you. So using this syntax, you can set the TCP source port for any application you want. Netcat will reroute it for you for free. Okay, now let's see this in action, this hardware firewall bypass thing. Okay, so this blue one is the client. And as you can see, I will set the source port for this and set the destination port to the RDP port 3389. This is the server, the green one, and I will start a bind shell on it on a different port, 31337. As you can see, there was no traffic yet. And I'm also going to start my executable, the kernel driver. And as you can see in the syntax, I set the TCP source port, the original destination port, and the new one where the bind shell is. Okay, now the client is going to connect to the RDP port through Netcat, send some message. And if you see, look at the Netcat, the communication has been established. If you look at the Wireshark level, you can see that the communication was through the RDP port. But if you look at the user space, you will see that the communication was between the special source port and the special bind shell port. And you know, because it's a TCP traffic, it's two ways. So from now on, I can use anything because it's a simple TCP connection. So I cannot just send data from the client to the server, but back and forth. All right. There are also some other use cases for this hardware firewall bypass kernel driver. For example, let's say that you have hacked a web server and you have already admin level privileges, but you don't have any shells because of the restrictive firewall. Then you can use this tool. And on the other hand, for example, you can set up for a netcat on the hacked server, and you can basically create a proxy from the hacked server and use this as a hope point, for example. And last but not least, you can use it to hide your backdoor traffic. So for example, if there is some log analysis done at the hacked company, and they will see, whoa, this port is strange, this is something new, what the heck is going on? But before that happens, you use this kernel driver and you configure it the way that in the firewall they will see legitimate traffic, you can stay under the radar. Okay, now, let's put the whole hack together. What happens? The user's workstation has been already infected. I drop my malware there, and the malware waits for the user to log in to the RDP server with two-factor authentication. It creates the screenshots, put on foreground, disables the keyboard and mouse. User says, oh shit. And meanwhile, my malware in the background can drop the malware on the RDP server using the keyboard events and Microsoft Office Visual Basic Code and the clipboard. The Visual Basic Code will load the DLL to bypass the application whitelist. I can escalate my privileges to admin level by exploiting a vulnerable third-party service. I can install with the admin privileges my kernel driver. I can also start my favorite bind shell, which was a meterpreter in my case, and it's done. And this is how it looks like in one picture. I'm the attacker, can connect to the infected workstation, my traffic gets rerouted, I set the TCP source port to the special port 1337, I connect to the port 3389, this is what the firewall sees, but because of my kernel driver at the RDP server level, this connection gets redirected to the bind shell on port 31337. Now let's see this in action. Okay, so I connect to the infected workstation because I have already compromised it. I set up the port forward in the infected client. And if I run the calculator, this is here on the workstation. This is where my code gets executed at the moment. And I already uploaded my malware to the infected workstation, and I'm going to start the user simulator. Now the user connected to the RDP server via two-factor authentication, and as you can see, this temp directory is empty at the moment. And whatever happens from now, this is done by the user simulator. Because RDP is the active window, everything gets executed on the RDP server. So it starts WinWord, creates a new document. It pastes some hex-encoded payload. Into the Word, creates a new Visual Basic application. through the clipboard, it creates the macro code, which will basically decode the hex payload and write it to a folder. And as you can see, the temp directory now has all my files. And it started the meterpreter bind shell. Together with the kernel driver I have dropped. And both of them are running with the service privileges, which was system in my case. Okay, now I start netcat on the user's workstation to set the TCP source port. And after everything is set, from the attacker machine, I can connect through all the port forwards and netcats and kernel driver stuff to the bind shell on the RDP server. And as you can see, this is the communication, which in at the firewall level is through the RDP port, and the meterpreter stage 2 DLL is downloaded. And here we have our shell. Sometimes Metasploit is a bit buggy, but we have the shell on the restricted workstation through all this magic. Now, as you can see, it can be, how could I say, quite suspicious for the user if he sees these things going on. So let's see the user experience, what really happens. This is the user's desktop. And he's connecting to the RDP server. User said, oh shit, Microsoft sucks again. I can't use my keyboard, I can't use my mouse. What happens? I'm going to call the help desk. Oh, no, okay, it works. Everything's fine. Okay, so lessons learned. Red team, you have two new tools. One, you can simulate the user and create some keyboard events. And for example, you can drop malware through a remote desktop to it or configure the EV or something like that. And my other tool, as you have seen, you can bypass hardware firewalls after you can execute kernel level code at the server level. Blue team members, you know, every additional layer of security you add to your network increases your security level, but you never can achieve 100% protection. Every layer can be bypassed. And I have heard from a lot of people that this restricted remote desktop stuff is pretty secure because this is not an interface for malware spreading. It is. It is a real interface for spreading malware. For example, this attack can be stopped by using some next generation firewall. I'm pretty sure you have heard about it on Black Hat. But the thing is that if I write a proxy and let Meterpreter through this proxy, which basically wraps my communication into something which looks like RDP, then again, these next generation firewalls can be bypassed as well. And last but not least, you shouldn't trust your firewall logs blindly because they might lie to you. Okay, guys, these tools have not been published yet. If you think I should not publish this because this is dangerous, shout no. Okay. If you think I should publish it, shout yes. All right. This is my GitHub. I understand, make this repository public. All right, it's public. And there you go. But there's one more thing. Actually, two things. I have created both tools with Metasploit post modules. So if you don't want to use it by itself, but you want to use it inside Metasploit, it's available to you just at your fingertips. Now on this final slide, you can see the links to the published code and to contact me and my blog and a lot of things. But the most important thing is, if you happen to be in Europe, especially in Hungary, in October, visit the Hacktivity HackerConf. It's the same cool as DEF CON is, but the lines are shorter. Thank you.